very briefly.
After the TEI today, we had the TV pass, and then there was a rest period. We came on duty at about 146 hours after the crew was awake, at which time we were just going through some of the housekeeping routines on the spacecraft. While we were in lunar orbit, we had an erratic, I guess I would call it, performance for a while of the fuel cell number 2 condenser exhaust temperature. That has stabilized out ever since we've left lunar orbit, and we haven't had any trouble with it or any indications of any trouble. We still don't fully understand why that occurred. There are a number of theories as to why it occurred, but we don't really know for sure. However, at this time, fuel cell number 2 is performing very well. It's performing, as a matter of fact, just like fuel cell number 3, both of them performing normally. Fuel cell number 1 was brought on the line, which I'll get to in a minute, on our shift, which is part of our regular plan now for bringing the cell online about once every 20 hours or so for about an hour and a half to warm it up and then take it offline, let it cool on down. The purpose of this is to keep the fuel cell within its operating temperature range so it would be available to us if we wanted further power in the spacecraft, which we really don't need at this time. Okay, the crew woke up and went through the normal configuration things they have to do when they wake up. We gave them a consumables update and a flight plan update, which didn't amount to very much here today. We talked some about the stowage, and you heard some comments on the air to ground about how the stowage problem seems to be that when they finish eating, there seems to be more things to stow back than there were when they took them out. We had a conversation about the water bag, and the crew has, I guess, continued to try to satisfactorily use that, and probably, as near as I can tell anyway, from their tone of voice and their comments, with not too much success, they still seem to have some trouble with gas in the water bag as they use it. We talked to the crew briefly, and that is, again, all in the air-to-ground transcript, a number of questions about the LEM operation on rendezvous day. And these were primarily questions which had been phrased for the people who are now beginning to look at the data from the point of view of the post-flight analysis and what we're going to do different and what we're going to fix, et cetera. So we try to get a little leg up on the problem in getting the crew's opinion on a number of things before they got back. A couple of reports during the day about the water on the forward hatch. This isn't of any concern us, but it is cool up there and there's water condensing there, and you saw some of that in the TV pass. At 150 hours was the time when we put fuel cell number 1 online. We did some program 23 work, which is mid-course navigation. As a technique, it appears that, as John Young reported, doing the task is easier than trying to superimpose a star on a horizon. The first correction that we got with the first mark was a very large correction, which it should not have been, actually. We don't fully understand why that had happened. The men are reducing all the data now, and hopefully during the course of the night we'll have a better handle on what happened on that first mark on the P-23. The subsequent marks brought the vacuum perigee, which is our measure of how well the onboard navigation vector is, consistently marched on down to approximately the kind of number we were looking for with the present known vacuum perigee. Let's see, we have some more program 23 work, which is this same kind of navigation work tomorrow. I believe we'll be operating off Earth landmarks tomorrow, though, so we'll get some more feeling and some more understanding as to how well that is going. Fuel cell number 1 was taken back offline in at about 152 hours. As you heard, we deleted the mid-course 5. At the present time, we're looking at a mid-course which is on the order of 1.2 feet per second tomorrow evening at 15 hours prior to entry. In all probability, we will be making a mid-course correction of about that magnitude at that time, but we'll just continue to accept the tracking data and update that. We had a TV pass. I didn't notice how long it went, but it seemed like it was on the order of about a half hour. And then we got into the work associated with configuring the cabin for the sleep period. We had a water dump The PTC attitude tonight will essentially be with the nose of the spacecraft and the windows facing to the southern hemisphere. Again, we will set up the 0.3 degree roll rate. That was just being set up as I left the control center. Last night, the last sleep period, we did not have any thruster firings during the passive thermal control. We're hoping for the same kind of success again tonight. I guess right now we're about 163,000 miles from the Earth. All the consumables are in real good shape. We're running well ahead on RCS, and we're in very good shape on the cryogenic oxygen and hydrogen. And there's nothing in those areas of any special significance that I ought to call attention to. That about summarizes what we're doing. Tomorrow, as I have said earlier, we have navigation work to do, and we'll have a mid-course later on in the evening to do. I have asked Pete Frank, at least I left note for him, to plan on bringing over for everybody tomorrow as many facts as we can pile up, numbers, etc., for the entry phase, since I know that you're always interested in getting the numbers straight, and I hope they can get a good list of that, those numbers for you. I'm sure, on the other hand, that you're going to ask him for one or two that he doesn't have. That summarizes the shift. And questions?
With respect to the gas in the water bag, what's the PSIG in the astronauts?
I don't know. But they seem to be feeling fine over it, and it doesn't seem to be bothering them very much.
I heard one weather report earlier today, and it didn't sound especially good, but by no means bad, and I was wondering if you had a later update on that.
No, I don't. No, I don't.
The staging problem that Tom Stafford spoke about this evening, I caught part of it. I thought he said that because he only had one of his restraints on, he was looking at that mode control switch a little bit cockeyed and looked like it was...
Yes.
Is there any set procedure on something so simple and basic as crewman restraints? Should he have had both on? Was it up to him to decide, or is there a set rule?
I don't think we, you know, require him to have any specific set of constraints on. I think the point that he was making about the restraint is that he was floating up in the cockpit and found himself in a different physical position than he usually operates in when he's standing on the floor in 1G. From his comment, I would assume that he had the switch called out properly in his paperwork, and that he stopped to look at it, had his finger on it, but from the fact that he was rising up in the cockpit, apparently, and from looking at it, he felt it was in the right position and proceeded from there. And it was just a matter of viewing angle on the switch and not seeing it right.
Glenn, I'm really very confused about the staging thing. It's been explained to death, but there are some things that just do not make sense. One obvious thing that comes to mind is the business about the checklists. We were told there was a deletion, which
is understandable. Well, that is what we had on the checklist we had on the ground. Now, from his comment today, it sounded like he had it in there, which may well have been caught at the Cape before they flew and penciled in, but I do not know that, okay? So, and I'm really not going to know it until I look at his checklist when he gets back. But they apparently were looking for the switch at that time and thought they had it in the right position.
How do you feel about three-way switches?
I've got to like them. We've got three-way switches throughout the cockpits. In many respects, you know, you have to fit the configuration into the space you have. If you've looked in the command module, you know how crowded that is. You could add 30%, I guess, and boy, you'd have quite a few.
Glenn, there have been a few things that go wrong, or anomalies, or whatever you want to call them, during this flight. How do you feel? Are there more than you expected, or fewer?
Well, I guess I would always feel best if we didn't have anything go wrong at all, but in the business that we're in, we have to be prepared for things happening, like the staging and like the problem we have with the fuel cell pumps. The comfortable thing about the spacecraft is, especially in the CSM, is that there's a margin in all systems, both in terms of functional capability and usually in terms of the consumables that we have on board. So in general, the spacecraft is well built and well proportioned for things like that. I'd prefer to fly without any anomalies at all, always.
Do you feel then that there have been more than you expected, or?
No.
Fewer?
No, in that I just don't go into a flight expecting any given number, nor do I go into a flight expecting to have problems with any given system, because if you start putting things like that in your mind, you start making mistakes, because you've already solved the wrong problem.
Let me put it to you one other way then. Has the flight gone as well as you expected, or better?
I think it's gone extremely well.
There's a question back there.
This is in respect to the water, hydrogen in the water. Are the astronauts still taking Lomatil, and are there any signs of any reaction along their vital signs coming down the line concerning the if they still are taking the medicine?
No, they have not reported taking any Lomatil in some number of days. I've forgotten the last time that they reported that.
But Gene reported today they had not taken any.
Had not taken any, and there are no evidences in the instrumentation, the bio-instrumentation that we have on the men of any reaction to that.
Well, then, can we take it that the concentration of the hydrogen has been cut down quite a bit then?
I don't know.
I've had another look at the physician's desk reference on this drug Lomatil, and there's a question that remains, and I wonder whether or not you've aware of any discussion of it with Dr. Berry and his people. One of the designed effects of Lomatil is to remove fluids from the gut, and it also has a tendency to enhance salivation and so on. And of course, it's kind of like a diuretic. It removes fluids from the system. And when you remove fluids from the system, you sometimes lower the blood pressure. Has there been any discussion that the transient low blood pressure that all space flights have produced might be aggravated by the continued use of Lomatil, and that the low blood pressure might pose an extra burden on the astronauts during reentry when they get sudden high G forces?
I have not been involved in any subject like that. Now, I know Dr. Berry, and I know he continues to advise the pilots that, you know, you have to be careful with any kind of medication you take, both for what it does and for the side effects that you're talking about. And we try to make a point of being sure we know what they're taking and being sure that we understand that. After our last conversation, it appears that that they've given up taking that, and from the appearance of the men on board, they seem to me to be as healthy three guys as we've had in spacecraft.
This didn't happen on your shift, but judging from the transcript early this morning, just after the trans-Earth injection burn, the way the astronauts talked very enthusiastically, it seemed to me that they were really excited by the sensation of rocketing away from the moon. I think Stafford spoke
yes.
of something like being in a cloud. Was there any discussion over in the Mission Control Center about this as to why they had this particular sensation? I don't recall anything like that on Apollo 8.
Oh, I just think it was their pilot instinct to enjoy rate of climb. I think that's all it was, and I think they...
But it sounded like something out of, you know, 2001 or something, like the Space Odyssey.
No, it's 1969. I think they were just enjoying the rate of climb.
Do you have another question, Pete?
Well, from what you know right now, have you arrived at any definite changes in procedures as regards communications?
I think, are you referring to the LEM communications? Is that what you mean?
Either LEM or CSM, any mission communications at all.
I think we still want to understand more fully the exact sequence we had with the LEM communications on the phasing day. We have gotten further report from Gene Cernan on that, as you probably read in the transcript today. And we want to more fully understand keeping the high, how we go about keeping the high gain antenna locked on. It appeared from his comments today that either it did not get locked on at all, or perhaps it was locked on a side lobe or something like that. And then he really didn't have any time to work the antenna to keep it locked on the earth. And so in the area of comm, I think that's the one area that we're going to have to understand better as we go into the next flight. In the area of comm for the CSM, gee, it's just again been performing extremely well, Pete. And we've done a number of tests where we've allowed the high-gain antenna to automatically reacquire the earth as it goes through this roll rate each time, which it has done very well. We're still reluctant to use that mode when the pilots go to sleep because you're kind of counting on a servo-mechanical type system to reacquire each revolution, and we're now in range practically where we can get omnis all the time, low bit rate, and very likely you can get hybrid rate for some percentage of the time on the omni antenna. So we're at the stage of the flight, and we are at this stage of the flight most of the time on the omnis, that it just isn't worth flying with the pilots asleep in that configuration. But we have exercised it just for the purpose of seeing how well it works, and it works well.
Aren't you getting a little better performance on your omni switching than you did on previous flights? It seems to me sometimes in the past when you went to omnis, you got all kinds of...
I had some problems now and then.
You seem to be working this better than you did before.
I haven't looked at the numbers, okay. But I recall the omnis being pretty good on Apollo 8. I haven't paid a lot of attention to the dB levels we've been receiving, but it seems to me that it's comparable to what we were getting on Apollo 8.
One more over here.
Was there a problem today with fuel cell 2 early in the day?
Was there a what?
A problem today with fuel cell 2.
Yes. A problem in that something kind of peculiar occurred on a measurement called a temperature of the condenser exhaust, which is where the hydrogen comes out and is separated, the water separated out of it, in that on two revolutions prior to TEI, this parameter oscillated back and forth about plus or minus 5 to 7 degrees a couple of times as the vehicle went into the night pass, you know, as it does as it's going around the corner of the moon. Did that a couple of times, and then on the last pass prior to TEI, we put fuel cell 1 back online to provide additional power for the burn, plus we purged the cell that was performing like this, and after that the cell has performed pretty nominally for a little while. After that it quivered a little bit now and then, but it's stopped that and it's right on the button. We don't fully understand why that occurred, but right now it's very stable.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.